Hello, and thanks for joining us here on the New Life Show, a series of talks with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Nitza Mazoz. Hello. Today, we'd like to talk to Dr. Lightman about the oral Torah. On one of our previous shows, we heard that there's the written Torah of Moses that's been with us for thousands of years. And in parallel, there is the Torah that was passed on from teacher to student, the oral Torah that explains the written Torah. We know from history that the different commentaries to the five books of Moses have brought much controversy to our people. We'd like to understand why and how can we use all of this for the better. Be with us, Nitza, please. Yeah, at a certain point around the times of the Second Temple, it was decided to put the oral Torah in writing because the fear was that it might be lost altogether when the people of Israel will disperse in exile, and they started writing it. And as a result, came the disputes between the Jews themselves. Some said, the written Torah is enough. Others said, no, it's impossible to understand anything without the oral Torah. So there started an entire controversy with, without the oral Torah. And when we look at this, what was the essence of the dispute itself? Not historically wise, but from the Kabbalistic point of view, in its essence. What actually happened among the Jewish people that created this dispute? It wasn't a dispute in favor or against the oral or written Torah or both of them, but the controversy was whether to fight for Lishma or not. Fight for what? Lishma. Lishma or not Lishma. Yeah. Meaning what? Lishma means in order to bestow toward love of others above reason, to cure a person of his ego, to rise above the ego. This is called Lishma. And lo Lishma, not Lishma, it means that we can live, keep on living as we are, and then we leave all of these books in order to learn from them, but we're not treating man himself, his nature, meaning without trying to bring a person to the degree of the Creator, meaning to really bring him to the degree of bestowal and love of others, love another as thyself. No, it's like what Rabbi Akiva cried, that love another as thyself is the great rule of the Torah, that it's the entire Torah, that he wanted to stop the deterioration, degradation of the people of Israel. This is actually what the struggle was about. Meaning, do we really need it as the main thing? Or we're incapable. And that we're incapable, this is something that we've known about from the times of the First Temple since then. Yeah, from about 1,000 years BC, dating back from the Second Temple. That since then it already became clear to us that to keep the degree that we have attained during the times of the First Temple and advance from there, that being the peak of human spiritual attainment, that it's simply impossible. From that point and on began the descent. And that was that. So to try and understand the dispute that you talked about, that's at the essence of things, if I understand correctly, that actually the entire Torah was given in order for a person to be able to develop an ability or an inner sense or an inner ability to love another. That being the means to reach love of the Creator. This being the reason. Otherwise, there would have been no such demand. So, we were given the Torah that we have to realize, in addition to the written Torah, that we have to realize the connections between us, and this in order to feel the Creator, to reach love of the Creator. Yeah. What happened in practice is that once there came this dispute regarding whether there is a need for the oral Torah at all, meaning the wisdom that teaches us how to love, how to connect with one another, and by that to connect with the upper force. What actually happens there? I feel there's a kind of split here. When they stopped advancing toward Lishma, meaning bestowal and love of others, which is something that began during the times of the First Temple, then the descent began until they went into the Babylonian exile. They came back from the Babylonian exile. They reached only the degree of the Second Temple, which is much less than the degree of the First Temple. And then also the Second Temple kept on being destroyed ever more until they reached a state where they could not remain on any degree of holiness, meaning any kind of connection between them and with the Creator. And so the temple was destroyed, love another as thyself disappeared altogether, it reached the lowest level, which is called going into exile, meaning they went into the egoistic will to receive, that really started having a feast between them, among all the Jews. And this is what it means that they took to the culture of the nations of the world, and this is how they went into the 2,000 years of exile. But as a result of Rabbi Akiva, whose student, the great Shimon Bar Yochai, wrote the book of Zohar, and from there came Kabbalists. And these Kabbalists, they said, no, we'll make sure that in each and every generation there will be such people that will at least try to reach love of others, and from that to reach love of the Creator by connecting everyone, by correcting the shattering of the soul of Adam HaRishon, literally meaning the first Adam. And they continued it for centuries and centuries, but these were very few people, and also sometimes they weren't connected between them, because in the meantime, the people of Israel dispersed among the nations of the world, so someone lived in Italy, and someone else lived in Lithuania, and someone else in Norway, and so on. Sometimes there was a connection between them back then, but not much. And also, they were always rejected. No one liked them. They were suppressed by the Jews themselves. So much so that, for example, in the times of the Baal Shem Tov, they informed the authorities about those Kabbalists, and they were put in jail, and in short, there are many stories about these things, meaning this minority that nonetheless always thought that it's necessary to reach Lishma, still it was always a suppressed minority, suppressed by the majority. But what they tried to do all the time was to work on the oral Torah, and besides, they wanted to put this Torah in writing. What does it mean in writing? As it says, write it on the plates of your heart, meaning to really engrave it in their desires, so that their desires will receive the form of the upper lights, and that's called writing, spiritual writing. What you just explained suddenly brought it to my attention that my concept of what the oral Torah is very different from what you just explained. For me, oral means that it's pa-pa-pa-pa-pa. Someone speaks it out. Yeah, and what you just explained gave it a completely different, yeah, completely different commentary. And I felt the same when you explained what Lishma is. So it's important to be precise. Torah Lishma is what? That I perform actions for the sake, for the benefit of others. Meaning, what did I receive the Torah for? For the sake of others, in order to love others, that through loving others, I will reach love for the upper force, I will reveal the upper force. Yes, and what is lo lishma, not lishma? It means that I use all of these writings, however you call them, oral Torah, written Torah, but I use them in order to calm myself down, that I benefit, I gain as a result, this world, the next world, that I'm respected for it, that I'm called a rabbi, and more and more. So actually, everything that it says, whether it's the Torah, the Talmud, the Mishnah, if I use all of these things for my own benefit, then it's not Lishma, and if I use all of them in order to reach love of others, then actually I turn them into Lishma. Yeah. So the question is, how do I actually use them? Depends on the person. Okay, I want to ask. As an example, you gave the book of Zohar that was written by the great Shimon Bar Yochai, the student of the great Rabbi Akiva around the 2nd century. Now, the book of Zohar, along with other books that were written by the great students of the great Rabbi Akiva, later on in history, they're all a part of what we call the oral Torah. So there are two things. There is the Torah of Moses that we call the written Torah and the oral Torah, a part of which is the book of Zohar and many other books. Now, my question is a fundamental one. There's a certain basis that's called the Torah of Moses, which is the written Torah, from which come many other writings that will be called the oral Torah. Why is it that there are so many commentaries to the five books of Moses? If this is something that people need in order to develop themselves and to discover higher and higher dimensions, as you explained before, and to discover the general force that's operating in reality, why couldn't Moses write everything that was necessary? Because later on came all the disputes as a result of that. Why do we need all the oral Torah that explains the written Torah? Why wasn't everything written from the start? Then at least everything's clear. Why do we need commentaries on the Torah of Moses? I don't know any commentaries. The book of Zohar. What do you mean by commentary? This is what I'm asking. Everything's written in the Torah of Moses. Everything. But in order to bring what it says there closer to people, there were different commentaries added to it, where the book of Zohar is a more inner commentary that speaks about the systems. What systems? The systems of the upper force. The systems that control our world. This is what the book of Zohar talks about. And there were such lighter commentaries added to it in order to explain to people, like, suppose, what she was told in school, for example. What does the Torah say about the different portions they studied in school? Like what you tell children. Sure, the Torah doesn't talk about that, and that is not its intention. But to get some psychological tips out of there, good behavior, morals. Okay, so everything's written in the Torah of Moses, but in order to bring it closer to people, it was given different commentaries, more internal and more external. Yes. Suppose I take two of the students of Rabbi Akiva. One is Shimon Bar Yochai, who writes the book of Zohar. Now, can you please explain, if up till now we had the Torah, this Torah, as something oral, why is it necessary to put it in writing now? Previously, it was enough. What was enough? Previously, you didn't need to write these things. And what changed? Because people started losing these degrees, the knowledge, the adhesion with these actions. What exactly did they lose? They lost the recognition of the Creator. The Lishma, as you explained before, the goal for which the Torah was given to us for, well, suppose the goal. It's not only the goal, it's the entire upper world. They started losing it. They wanted to keep it in some way, somehow, in order to help also the future generations, not themselves. And this is how it happened. And this is why they put it in writing. Yeah? But those that put it in writing were in attainment of the spiritual degrees. They were Kabbalists. Meaning those that wrote, they knew what they're writing. Those that read it today, for sure they have no idea what are they reading about. Okay, so comes the great Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, and he writes the Book of Zohar in order to pass it on to future generations because people already started falling from the recognition of spirituality. Afterwards, another student of Rabbi Akiva and the students of that student, they decide that all those things that were passed on from teacher to student for generations, we want to put that in writing too. So now we have two compositions that up till now weren't in writing and now they are. One is the Book of Zohar and the other is the Mishnah. Then the Braito, the Talmud and so on. But let's talk about the Book of Zohar and the Mishnah. At a certain point in time, both of them turned from oral Torah into written Torah, and suddenly they were written in a book. The other Torah was also in writing. What do you mean? The other Torah was also in writing. What Torah? Where they took it from? From the Torah of Moses. Yeah? So I have two works, compositions, that came from the first one. Okay, so we have the Torah of Moses that was first, and then we have two branches that came from it, the Book of Zohar and the Mishnah, that were put in writing. Yes. How are they similar? How are they different? They're completely similar. How? The only question is the style, the extent to which the Mishnah conveys all of the laws of the upper world in corporeal forms as a root of the spiritual branch, like we study, that there is the root and branch. That which exists in the upper world as a root comes down to us, to this world as a branch, and we have the roots above, the branches down in this world, and if you have the still, vegetative, animate people in this world, it's because they have roots, and according to the behavior of the roots, come down from there the threads and control, manage all of these puppets, the still, vegetative, animate, and people. So what does it say in the Mishnah? In the Mishnah, it's written in the form of the still, vegetative, animate, and people on the level of this world. It's all written in the words of this world. How to sacrifice, how to do this, how to do that, how to realize these things, how to behave with your neighbors, had to work in the field, and so on and so on. Whereas the Zohar writes on the level of the upper spiritual world. So one of them wrote on what's beneath, and the other about what's above. What did they write about? Actions. Actions in the upper providence, in the governance of the Creator. But both speak about the same. Again, I understand there are two levels. The Mishnah speaks on the level of this world, as if this world, in the language of this world, and the Zohar speaks in the language of the upper world. Angels, Sfirot, Olamot, worlds, and so on. What does it talk about? About the governance, about the entire functioning of the upper system that the Creator created, that He sustains and fulfills. So we have two books here that talk about the same topic, which is how the general system controls our entire reality. This is what it speaks about? Yes. And these are two books that are written in different styles. The Book of Zohar speaks about the network of the upper forces, how they operate and control us. And the Mishnah talks about what? The same, only in a different language. how will we call this different language? The language of branches. That says what? What does the language of branches mean? That in our world you have animals, beasts, fish, people, plants, everything that I see. Yeah. And as it says, you haven't a blade of grass below that has not a fortune and guard above that strike it and tells it grow. That everything that happens down below in our world is dictated from above. Look, you're sitting like this and she's sitting like that. I'm just taking this as an example. It's all dictated from above. From above where? From the forces around us. Also what she's saying right now. What I'm about to say, right? When you described it, I felt that you're talking about something like a computer, suppose, that there's the language that the programmers use, and there's the language that the users use. I'm given a manual's guide, how to use the computer. Now, it seems as if these are two different languages, but actually it speaks about both the Book of Zohar and the Mishnah talk about the same thing. Yeah, so I felt that the Mishnah is like the user's guide. They're all considered holy writings that talk about the actions of the Creator, only in a different style. The special thing about it is how you use it. That if I take the Mishnah and I study it as is, that too, hold on to the talit, and one says it's mine, the other says it's mine, and so on and so forth, that I'm talking about theft, about problems, about legal matters. When I take the Book of Zohar, there you have no such thing. There it says that the evil force and the good force, how these two exist in a person, and how he has to distinguish between them and to arrange them in such a way that he'll grow, that by them he'll ascend even higher, coming even closer to the Creator. The Mishnah, too, speaks of that, but its language is very hidden. And the language of the Zohar is more revealed, even though that the Zohar is called Sod, but it's more revealed. Yeah. It is as if causes less confusion. This is what I feel. And this is what the Vilna Gaon writes about. Yeah, that those that write in a simpler language can cause me, the ordinary user, to get confused. When you read the Chochmat HaSod, the secret wisdom, at least I understand that I don't understand, so I don't get confused. Right, so here there's a problem, that those people that said, we don't need Lishma, it's enough for us to keep things as they are, we'll study and that's it. They followed the Mishnah, and then the Talmud, and on. Meaning the external commentary. That which exists in this world, without saying that it's the language of the branches and so on, but they study it. Why? The Torah is holy. We'll study it. It's the desire of the Creator. Whereas Kabbalists that study the Kabbalah books, the Book of Zohar and so on, that they already study it, not on the corporeal level, but above that, they understand that they study something that is above us, that these are the rules that control us, that we have to use these rules in order to rise to their root. And when we rise to their root, we have to acquire them and control ourselves by them in such a way that we will become a part of the next world and that our qualities will become like the roots, which is called Lishma. You studied from the great Kabbalist Baruch Shalom Alevi Ashlag, the son of Bala Sulam, literally meaning the master of the ladder, the great Yehuda Ashlag. Did he teach you how to understand the inner meaning of the Mishnah? And if so, how is it different than when I open the Mishnah and read it, like the example that you gave that two are grabbing the talit and pulling it? It all depends on the attaining person. Your teacher, what did he teach you? We studied together only the original Kabbalah books. When he read the Mishnah, what did he see? I don't know. What do you think? He saw the same that he saw in the Talmud of the Ten Sefirot. Being what? He saw the actions of the Creator of the upper force. And how should a person espouse these actions in order to achieve the recognition of the Creator and adhesion with Him? What does it mean to espouse the actions of the Creator? To fulfill them, to carry them out. To acquire a tzimtzum, meaning restriction, masach, screen, or chozer, zivug daka, in short, to perform spiritual actions on his will to receive and to learn how to use it in order to bestow. This is what a Kabbalist sees in the Mishnah or the Gemara, in everything. That I acquire the upper force, it is in order for me to be able to use my desires in order to bestow, which is called love of others, that I bestow to others, and through others I bestow to the Creator. Unfortunately, our time's up again, so to summarize. There's the Torah of Moses. After it came plenty of other books. We talked about two of the main books, which is the Book of Zohar and the Mishnah. Later, there were also other books. Today, when I open a book and read the words from the page, then possibly I don't understand what it really means, and I need an oral guidance to understand what the writing says because I don't really see what it says, for sure. So, also today, thousands of years after the oral Torah was written, still there is an oral Torah. Of course, you can't put the oral Torah in writing. Can you please define what the oral Torah is? The special treatment that a Kabbalist teacher passes on to his Kabbalist student according to the extent to which the student can be in adhesion with him. It's a kind of key to the written word? Yes. That opens what? You see what it says. Otherwise, you can't. This is the secret. Dr. Lightman, thank you very much. Thank you, Nitza. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, we wish you all the best.